I've never seen anything more beautiful. Thank you. Will you put it on me? She gave him a long kiss. I suppose I could cancel if it bothers you that much. How long will your dinner take?
I'll make it quick. Meet you back here in 2 hours.
The bracelet was the most amazing piece of jewelry she'd ever seen. And it was hers. All hers. She turned slowly and, never taking her eyes from Jackson, began to undress. When she was finally wearing nothing but the bracelet, she walked over to him and purred.
Hurry back, and then I'll show you how very grateful your girl is.
After he left, she pulled out her phone and took a selfie, a very erotic selfie. She waited an hour, knowing he'd be in the middle of dinner, then texted it to him. That ought to have him calling for the check. 33. Amber delighted in soaking in Daphne's bathtub, more often than not with Jackson. She luxuriated in the soft-as-silk sheets as she lay next to Daphne's husband and drove him mad with lust. And how liberating it was to know that no matter how many towels she used, no matter how mussed the sheets became, no matter how many glasses of wine or dishes of food she consumed, she could walk out the door in the morning and know the maid would have everything spick and span when she and Jackson returned in the evening. The doorman nodded politely to her on arrival and departure, a model of discretion, just like the new maid. Matilda, the old one, had been fired. Apparently she'd stolen some of Daphne's jewelry, the same jewelry that Amber had hawked for a little extra cash. The night before, they'd gone to an art opening at a small gallery on 25th Street. The artist, Eric Fury, was one Jackson had discovered a few years ago and had introduced to his collector friends. The moment they'd entered the gallery, they had been surrounded. It had been clear not only that Jackson was well known, but also that people wanted to be in the orbit of his power and charm. Amber had been careful not to put her arm in his or appear too intimate. As soon as Eric Fury saw Jackson, he'd rushed over to shake his hand.
"Jackson, wonderful to see you."
He swept his arm around to indicate the crowded room.
"Isn't it great?"
"It is, Eric, and you deserve every bit of it," Jackson said.
"It's all thanks to you. I can never tell you how grateful I am."
"Nonsense. I just made the introductions. Your art speaks for itself. You wouldn't be here if you didn't have the talent."
Fury turned to Amber.
"You must be Daphne."
"Actually, this is my assistant, Amber Patterson. Unfortunately, my wife was unable to be here, but she loves your work as much as I do."
Amber extended her hand. "It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Fury. I read recently that you're moving away from canvas and instead painting on wood you collect from old buildings." Jackson had looked at her in surprise, and Fury said,
"You are absolutely right, Miss Patterson. It's a statement about what we lose when we let historical edifices be torn down."
Suddenly a man appeared with a camera.
"Hey, Mr. Fury, how about a photo for tomorrow's edition?"
Eric smiled and stood next to Jackson as Amber quickly moved away from the twosome. The last thing she needed was another picture of her in the newspaper.
"Okay, kid, get back to your fans and sell some art," Jackson said when the photographer finished.
When the artist walked away, Jackson walked over to where Amber stood, admiring one of the works.
"I didn't realize you knew anything about Eric Fury," he said.
"I don't really, but when you asked if I wanted to go to the exhibit, I read up on him. I always like to know something beforehand. It makes the experience much more rewarding."
He nodded his head in approval.
"Impressive."
Amber smiled.
That was discreet of you, moving out of the picture. I hope you didn't feel uncomfortable, he said. That was funny. He thought she was protecting him.
Not at all. You know I'll always have your back.
She smiled and moved a little closer to him.
And your front, too, she whispered.
I think it's time to split, he said.
You're the boss.
As they circled the room, bidding everyone goodnight, Amber experienced just what it would feel like to be Jackson's wife, to be at the center of the universe with him, and it felt sublime. She only needed to bide her time. They grabbed a taxi back to the apartment and were practically tearing each other's clothes off as the private elevator ascended. They never got to the bedroom, but made furious love on the living room floor. That was one of the things Amber especially loved. She made sure that they'd had sex in every room, even both of the girls' bedrooms. That one had been a challenge, but she wanted her scent everywhere, like an alley cat. She heard the shower going and turned lazily to look at the clock on the nightstand. 7:30. Jackson came out of the bathroom with a towel around his waist, his chest still shiny with dampness. He sat on the edge of the bed and ruffled her hair.
Good morning, sleepyhead.
I didn't even hear the alarm. I'll get up.
You put on quite a show last night. No wonder you're exhausted.
He leaned down and gave her a long, sensuous kiss.
Oh, come back to bed, she cooed.
He ran his hand down the front of her body.
Nothing I'd like more, but remember, I have a 10 o'clock with Harding and Harding.
Oh, that's right. Sorry I kept you up so late.
Don't ever apologize for that.
He rose, dropped the towel, and began dressing. Amber snuggled against the pillow and admired the toned and muscular body that she now knew so intimately. He finished dressing as she slowly got out of bed.
I'm off, he said, as he pulled her naked body to him. Give me a kiss and hustle. We need to prepare for that meeting.
Amber hurriedly poured a glass of juice and then got into the shower. She chose the red Oscar de la Renta suit Jackson had bought for her last week and was out the door close to 8. She made it to the office by 8:45 and strolled into Jackson's office. She knew he was watching her as she strutted in the fitted jacket and short skirt that hugged her bottom. At 12 o'clock, the meeting in Jackson's office was still going on when Amber looked up to see Daphne approaching her desk. She looked like she had gained more weight and was not her usual impeccable self. Her lipstick was mussed, her blouse so tight that the buttons were straining. Amber noticed, too, that she wore no jewelry other than her ring. Amber rose from her desk.
Daphne, what a surprise. Is everything all right?
What was she doing here?
Yes, everything's fine. I was in town and just wondered if Jackson might be available for lunch. Was he expecting you?
Well, no. I just took a chance.
I tried calling you to get his schedule, but they said you weren't in yet.
Is he here?
Amber stood up straighter.
He's in a meeting with a group of investors. I'm not sure when they'll be finished.
Daphne looked disappointed.
Oh, did the meeting just start?
Amber shuffled some papers on her desk.
I don't know. I had car trouble this morning, so I missed my train. That's why I was late.
She stared at Daphne.
Well, maybe I'll wait a little bit. Do you mind if I sit in here with you? I won't bother you if you have work to do.
Of course not. Please have a seat.
By the way, that's a beautiful suit you're wearing.
Thank you. I got it at a consignment shop here in the city. Amazing what you can find for cheap.
She wanted to add, and guess whose red bra and panties I'm wearing. Daphne sat,
and Amber went back to the pile of work on her desk while fielding phone calls.
You've really taken to this job, haven't you? Jackson says he wouldn't know what to do without you. I knew you'd be perfect for him. Amber bristled. She was sick and tired of Daphne patronizing her. She was so out of tune with her husband's needs and desires, it was laughable.
Just then, the door to Jackson's office opened, and the four-member Harding and Harding team stood there shaking hands and saying their goodbyes. Amber could tell from the look on Jackson's face that the meeting had gone well. She was glad. This would mean a financial leap into a whole new stratosphere. Jackson, now standing alone, looked surprised to see Daphne.
"Hi, darling," she said, rising from her chair and embracing him.
"Daphne, how nice. What are you doing in New York?"
"Can we go into your office?" she asked in a sweet voice.
Jackson followed her in and closed the door behind them. After 20 minutes, Amber was fuming. What could possibly be going on in there? Suddenly, Jackson was at the door and said,
"Amber, can you come in and bring my schedule with you? I seem to have erased it somehow."
Daphne looked up as Amber entered.
"You see, Amber, what on earth would he do without you? Jackson's just been telling me what an innovator you are."
"How's my afternoon looking, Amber? My wife wants to take me to lunch."
Amber pulled up the calendar on her iPhone.
"It looks like you have a lunch appointment at 12:45 with Margot Samuelson from Atkins Insurance."
He didn't, but Amber wasn't about to let Jackson and Daphne have a meal together. She turned to Daphne.
"I'm so sorry you came in for nothing."
Daphne got up from her seat.
"Don't worry. I had to come in for a foundation meeting this morning. It's no problem."
She walked behind the desk and gave Jackson a kiss.
"I'll see you tonight?"
"Absolutely. I'll be home for dinner."
"Good. We've missed you."
Amber walked her out, and Daphne gave her a hug.
"I'm glad he's coming home tonight. The girls miss him. I'm not sure if you know, but he's been spending a lot of time at the apartment. Are you sure you're not noticing anything suspicious? No one calling here for him or anything?"
"Believe me, Daphne, no one is calling or coming around. I even stayed at the apartment one night when you and Jackson were at the lake, and there's no sign that anyone but Jackson has been there. It's just a super busy season here. I'm sure there have been times like this before."
"Yes, I suppose you're right. There have been. It feels different this time, though."
"I think you're imagining things.
Thanks for keeping me on an even keel."
"Anytime." Once Daphne was gone, Amber went straight to Jackson's office.
"What did she want?"
"She wanted to have lunch, just like she said."
"You were alone a long time. What was that all about?"
"Whoa, she's my wife, remember?"
Amber did her best to backpedal.
"I know. Sorry, it's just..."
She choked back fake tears.
"It's just that I care about you so much. I can't stand the thought of your being with anyone else."
Jackson got up from his desk chair and opened his arms.
"Come here, you little worrier."
He hugged her, and she held on to him tightly.
"Stop fretting. It will all work out, I promise you."
Amber knew better than to challenge him by asking him how and when it was all going to work out.
"You're going back to Connecticut tonight?"
He moved her back, his hands on her shoulders, and looked into her eyes.
"I have to. Besides, I want to check things at home. Daphne looks like she's having problems."
"Yes, I noticed that too. She's gained more weight, hasn't she?" Amber said.
"She looked sloppy, and that's not like her. I want to check on the girls, too. Make sure everything's okay."
Amber wiggled back into his arms.
I'll miss you so much.
He dropped his arms and walked to the office door. Amber was already unzipping her skirt as she heard the lock click. 34.
Jackson told Amber he had a surprise for her. The chauffeur picked them up from the apartment and drove them to Teterboro Airport, where a private jet waited for them. When Amber saw the airfield, she turned to Jackson.
What are we doing? She asked.
Jackson pulled her closer to him.
We're taking a little trip.
A trip? Where? I don't have any clothes with me.
Of course you don't, but you won't be in them much anyway, he said with a laugh.
Jackson! Amber feigned outrage. But really, I didn't pack anything.
Don't worry. There are stores in Paris.
Paris? She cried. Oh, Jackson, we're going to Paris?
The most romantic city in the world.
Amber unbuckled her seatbelt, slid onto Jackson's lap, and kissed him. They almost undressed right there in the car, but they had pulled to a stop near the jet stairs. Jackson was the first to pull away.
Here we are, he said, and opened his door.
They boarded the plane, and Amber looked around while Jackson talked to the pilot. The only planes she'd been on were commercial airliners, crowded with rows and rows of seats, and naturally, Amber had never sat anywhere but in economy. Even that time she'd met Jackson and the family in London, she had flown commercially. She knew that private jets existed, but she'd never imagined they looked like this. Supple leather sofas in a beautiful cream color sat on both sides of the plane, facing each other. There was a large screen TV, and a dining table for four had a round crystal vase filled with fresh flowers. A door opened onto a bedroom with a king-size bed, and the bathroom was almost as luxurious as the one in the New York apartment. In fact, Amber thought, it was like being in a smaller but just as sumptuous home. Jackson came up behind her and put his arms around her waist.
You like?
What's not to like?
Follow me, he said.
He led her into the bedroom, where he opened the closet doors. Indicating a mass of clothing hanging there, he said,
look through them and decide what you want to keep. Keep all of them if you like.
When did you have time to do this?
I took care of it last week, he said.
Amber went to the closet and went through the hangers one by one, examining the dresses, tops, pants, jackets, and sweaters, every one still with a tag on it. Obviously, he'd bought them just for her. She excitedly began pulling them out to try on, kicking off her shoes and removing her dress. Jackson sat on the bed.
You don't mind if I watch this little show, do you?
Not one little bit.
She tried on every last piece, modeling them for Jackson, who approved of it all. Of course, he had chosen everything, so it stood to reason that he would.
There are shoes in there, too, up top, on the shelf, he said.
You think of everything, don't you?
I do.
Amber looked up and counted 15 shoeboxes with names she had only dreamed about. Each pair cost about the same as her monthly rent, some of them even more. When she got to the Jimmy Choo's with white suede, crystals, and ostrich feathers, she put them on and took off everything, then wiggled into the delicious red and black lace corset he'd bought for her. She felt like a movie star, with her stupendously expensive duds, a private jet to travel in, and a gorgeous man dying to make love to her. She walked over to Jackson, still seated on the bed, and, running her fingers through his hair, pulled his face against her chest. She pushed him down and began to work her magic. In a matter of seconds,
she would do her best to take him to another world. Later, they had dinner by candlelight, Amber still in her high heels, but now with a silk robe over her naked body. "I'm famished," she said as she cut into her filet mignon.
"No wonder. You must have burned up 5,000 calories."
"If I could stay in bed with you and never have to come up for air or food, I would be the happiest girl alive." She made sure to stroke his ego every chance she got.
Jackson raised his wine glass. "That would be a perfect world, my hungry little sexaholic."
When they landed at Le Bourget Airport in Paris, they were whisked by chauffeur to the Hotel Plaza Athénée. Amber loved the hotel, with its red awnings and crimson bouquets everywhere you looked. She toured its 35,000-bottle wine cellar and was pampered at the Dior Institute Spa. It was the most glorious week of her life, strolling along the Champs-Élysées and dining in intimate cafes with soft lighting and delectable food. The Eiffel Tower thrilled her. She was overwhelmed by the vastness of the Louvre and its masterpieces, moved by the grand edifice of Notre Dame, and charmed by the city's amber hue as lights glowed in the twilight. And in between this eye-opening journey, she never let Jackson forget how virile and exciting she found him. The visit had seemed to fly by, Amber thought as they boarded the private plane for their return. She sat without speaking for the next hour while Jackson gathered papers from his briefcase and began making notes. When he finished, she went over and sat next to him. "This has been the most wonderful week of my life. You've really opened up my world." Jackson smiled but said nothing. "It's been heaven having you all to myself. I hate the thought of sharing you with Daphne." Jackson frowned, and Amber knew immediately that she'd made a mistake. She never should have mentioned her. Now he was probably thinking about Daphne and the girls. Damn. She usually didn't make that kind of slip-up. She'd have to try to recover.
"I've been thinking," he finally said. "How would you feel about having your own apartment in New York?"
She was nonplussed. "Why would I want that? I like living in Connecticut. Besides, when I want to stay in New York with you, we have your place."
"But it's getting complicated. If you had your own apartment, you could have all your own things there. You wouldn't have to hide your clothes or make sure they're out of my apartment in case Daphne comes into the city."
She didn't want her own place. She wanted Daphne's place. When she didn't answer, Jackson went on.
"I'd buy it for you, of course. We'd furnish it together, buy all the art and books you love. It would be our own hideaway, just ours."
Their hideaway. She didn't want to be hidden. She wanted to be very much out in the open, to be Mrs. Jackson Parrish. "I don't know, Jackson. It might be too soon for something like that. Besides, wouldn't Daphne wonder how I got the money for a New York apartment? And what about Greg? I've been able to hold him off, but if he thinks I'm a New York sophisticate, I won't be able to play the innocent little girl. And we have to keep up that little charade for Daphne's sake, although I'm having more and more trouble keeping his hands off me. I've stopped him a couple of times before he could finish what I think was going to be a proposal." Jackson's face grew red, just as Amber had hoped.
"Have you slept with him?"
"Really? Are you serious?" She took the napkin from her lap and threw it on the table. "I'm finished." She rose from her chair and strode into the bedroom. She wasn't going to be cast aside again. It felt like her plans were all going awry. Oh, Jackson was under her spell at the moment, and he was buying her expensive things and taking her on fabulous trips.
But she wanted more. Much more. And she'd be damned if she was going to let anything stand in her way. Especially now that she'd missed 2 periods. 35. Tonight was the night. Amber was now 10 weeks pregnant and couldn't hide it much longer. Jackson thought she was on the pill, and she'd even made sure to get a prescription and take a pill out of the dispenser each day so he wouldn't be suspicious. Then she'd flush it. The only medication she was taking was Clomid for fertility. She probably didn't need it, but she wasn't taking any chances. She needed to get pregnant before he tired of her. She had been a little worried about twins, but then she figured, if one was good, 2 would be even better. She'd hoped to find out the sex at the last appointment, but it was apparently still too soon. With the computer skills she'd honed in months of night classes, she'd been able to doctor the image from the ultrasound, so she'd tell him it was a boy. By the time they were married, if she ended up having a girl, it would be too late for him to do anything about it anyway. She'd gone to Babesta earlier in the day and bought a bib, Daddy's little boy, that she planned to give him tonight after they made love. Then he'd finally leave Daphne, and she could drop the facade and stop pretending to be her friend. She couldn't wait to see the look on Daphne's face when she found out that Amber was pregnant. It would be almost as delicious as telling Bella she wouldn't be the youngest anymore. Move over, baby. You're old news now. Once she was Mrs. Parrish, those 2 brats were on borrowed time. They could go to community college as far as she was concerned. But she was getting ahead of herself. First, she had to convince Jackson to leave them. When Jackson arrived at the apartment, Amber was wearing a black leather corset and collar. Daphne had complained to her on a recent night out that Jackson's tastes were becoming more unconventional. When she'd pressed for more details, the prude had turned red and mentioned something about restraints. Amber had decided to test the waters, and what she'd found was that Jackson was craving more adventure in the sack. She'd gladly given it to him, and together they scoured a few online stores and ordered all sorts of interesting sex toys. She encouraged him to push the limits, was ready to do whatever she had to make him compare Daphne unfavorably to her. She kept all their toys in a drawer in the guest room, half hoping Daphne might snoop when she was there, and Amber could have a nice laugh at her expense. But Daphne never mentioned anything to her.
"That was amazing,"
she nuzzled closer to him.
"If I were Daphne, I'd never let you out of my bed."
She bit his earlobe.
"I don't want to talk about Daphne,"
he whispered. She giggled.
"She likes to talk about you."
He sat up, his brow furrowed.
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, nothing. Just little wifely complaints. No big deal."
"I want to know. What did she say?"
There was a hard edge to his voice. She slid back so she could see his face, her finger tracing a pattern on his chest as she spoke.
"Just stuff about how she's at a point in her life when she wants to chill out, and you're always pushing her to socialize. She said she'd rather stay home and watch old Law and Order reruns. I told her she was lucky to go places with you, but she just shook her head and said she was getting too old for all these dinners and galas keeping her out late."
It was a total lie, but so what? He'd never know. She watched his face to see how he reacted, pleased to see his jaw clench.
"I don't appreciate the 2 of you discussing me."
He slid from the bed and threw on his silk robe. Amber went to him, still naked, and pressed herself against him.
"We don't talk about you, I promise. She just complains, and I defend you, then change the subject. I adore you, you know that."
She hoped he believed that. His eyes narrowed.
He didn't look convinced. She changed her approach.
I think Daphne's out of her element. You're so brilliant and accomplished. You know all about art and culture, and she... Well, she's just kind of a simple girl. It's hard to keep up the pretense.
I suppose, he said.
Come back to bed. I have a surprise.
He shook his head.
I'm not in the mood.
Okay, then. Let's go to the living room. I have a present for you.
She grabbed his hand. He yanked it back from her.
Stop telling me what to do. You're starting to sound like a nagging wife.
She felt tears of rage spring to her eyes. How dare he talk to her like that? She swallowed her anger and made her voice sweet. It wouldn't do to let him see how pissed she was.
I'm sorry, sweetie. Would you like a drink?
I'll get it myself.
She didn't follow him, but sat down and forced herself to read a magazine, then another to give him some time to cool off. After about an hour, she retrieved the small gold bag with the bib from inside the closet and carried it into the living room. He was sitting in one of the dining room chairs, still brooding.
Here you go.
What is it?
Open it, silly.
He moved aside the tissue paper and pulled out the bib. He looked up at her, puzzled. She took his hand and put it on her belly.
Your baby is in here.
His mouth dropped open.
You're pregnant? With a boy?
She nodded.
Yes. I couldn't believe it myself. I didn't want to say anything until I was sure. There's something else in there.
He rooted around and found the sonogram picture.
That's our son.
Her smile was victorious.
A boy? Are you sure?
100%.
He stood up, grinning from ear to ear, and picked her up.
This is wonderful news. I'd given up on ever having a son. Now you have to let me get you a place here.
Was he serious?
A place here?
Well, yes. You can't very well stay where you are now.
The blood was pounding in her ears.
You're right, Jackson. I can't. And I don't want my son to grow up wondering why his father has him hidden in some back alley. He needs to be with family. Once he's born, we'll go back to Nebraska.
She turned and stomped from the room.
Amber, wait.
She threw on a pair of jeans and a sweatshirt and began packing a bag. Did he really expect her to go on being his secret now that she was giving him an heir? He was crazy if he thought she'd let Daphne continue to reap the benefits of being Mrs. Parrish while she worked in his office like a slave and he snuck in visits to his son. The hell with that.
What are you doing?
Leaving. I thought you loved me. What a fool I've been. I don't see Daphne giving you a son, although she looks more pregnant than I do.
He grabbed her hands.
Stop. I was insensitive. Let's talk.
What's there to talk about? Either we're going to be a family or we're not.
He sat down on the bed and ran his hand through his hair.
I need to think. We'll figure this out. Don't even think about moving away.
She doesn't appreciate you, Jackson. She told me she cringes when you touch her. But I love you so much. All I want to do is take care of you, be the wife you deserve. I'll always put you first, even before this child. You're everything to me.
She got down on her knees, the way he liked, and showed him just how much she adored him. When she finished, he pulled her to him.
How was that, Daddy?
He gave her an inscrutable smile and stood up, picking up the sonogram picture again. His fingers traced it.
My son.
He looked up at Amber.
Does anyone else know? Your mother? Your friends?
She shook her head.
Of course not. I wanted you to be the first.
Good. Don't tell anyone yet. I have to figure out a way to get out of this marriage without Daphne taking me to the cleaners. If she finds out you're pregnant, it could cost me a lot of money. Amber nodded.
I understand. I won't breathe a word to anyone.
He continued to sit, a look of such deep concentration on his face that she was afraid to speak. Finally, he stood and began to pace back and forth.
Okay, this is how we're going to play it. You'll get everything out of this apartment, and we'll move you into a rental for now. If Daphne gets suspicious, the last thing we need is for her to find your things here.
But Jackson, she whined, I don't want to move to some awful rental. I'll be all alone.
He stopped pacing and stared at her.
What do you mean, some awful rental? What kind of cheapskate do you think I am? If you don't want an apartment, we'll get a large suite at the plaza. You'll have people to wait on your every need.
But what about you? When will I see you?
We have to be careful, Amber. I'm going to have to spend a little more time at home. You know, to allay any suspicion. You'll have to stop working once you're showing. Stay out of the way, so no talk gets back to Daphne.
And what am I supposed to tell Daphne? She'll get suspicious if I stop hanging out with her.
He chewed his lip and then nodded.
You'll say someone in your family is sick. You're taking some time off to go help.
This was beginning to sound like a bad plan to Amber. She'd be stuck away in some hotel, completely dependent on his being true to his word. It felt like she was being put out on a boat without a life jacket or a paddle, and could be swept away at Jackson's whim.
I don't want to be in some impersonal hotel. It won't be good for me to be in some strange place that doesn't feel like home. It won't be good for the baby either.
He sighed.
Fine, we'll rent an apartment. A nice one that will feel like home. You can buy whatever you'd like for it.
She thought about that for a few minutes. It was probably the best offer she was going to get at this point.
How long?
I don't know. Maybe a few months. We should settle it all by then.
She was angry and scared now, which made it easy to cry.
I hate this, Jackson. I love you so much, and now we're going to have to be separated. I'll be alone in some apartment that isn't even ours. It makes me feel so afraid, the way I used to feel when I was little and we moved all the time because we couldn't pay the rent.
She sniffled and wiped the tears from her cheeks, hoping this tale of woe might move him. He gave her a long look.
Do you want me to lose everything? You're just going to have to trust me.
He wasn't biting. She'd have to go along with the plan, and hope he meant what he said until she could come up with something else. But what if he proved to be untrustworthy? Then what? She'd be shit out of luck, just like she was when she fled from Missouri. She wasn't going to let him get away with throwing her and this kid she was carrying aside, even if she had to take more drastic action this time. No more screwing Amber. Those days were over.
Part 2. Daphne, 36. I didn't used to be afraid of my husband. I thought I loved him, back when he was kind, or pretended to be, before I knew what a monster looks like up close. I met Jackson when I was 26. I'd finished my graduate studies in social work and was in the planning stages of the foundation I was starting in honor of Julie. I'd gotten a job at Save the Children in operations and had been there for 6 months. It was a great organization, where I could work at something I loved while learning everything I'd need to run my own foundation one day. A coworker recommended I get in touch with Parrish International, an international real estate firm with a reputation for giving back. Jackson was known for his philanthropy, and she had an in. Her father was a business associate. I had expected to be pawned off on some junior executive. Instead, I was granted an audience with Mr. Parrish himself. He was nothing like the captain of industry I had read about. With me, he was amiable and funny. He put me at ease from the start. When I told him my plans for the foundation and why I was starting it, he shocked me by offering to fund Julie's Smile. 3 months later, I'd quit my job and was the head of my own foundation. Jackson had assembled a board, which he joined, provided the funding, and found me office space. Things had remained professional between us. I hadn't wanted to jeopardize his support of the foundation, and to be honest, I was also a little scared. But over time, when the lunches turned into dinners, it seemed natural, inevitable, even, that our relationship would turn more personal. His wholehearted embrace of my charity turned my head, I'll admit. So I agreed to go to his house for a dinner to celebrate. The first time I saw his 30-room estate, the vastness of his wealth hit me. He lived in Bishop's Harbor, a picturesque town on the coast of Long Island Sound with a population of about 30,000. The town's shopping area could rival Rodeo Drive, with stores far too expensive for my budget, and the only domestic cars on its pristine roads belonged to household staff. The houses dotting the shoreline in the area were magnificent, set far back from the road, shielded by gates, and on grass so lustrous and green it didn't look real. When Jackson's driver pulled the car into the long driveway, it took a minute for the house to come into view. My breath caught in my throat when we approached the tremendous gray estate. When we walked into the grand foyer, with a chandelier that would have been at home in Buckingham Palace, I gave him a strained smile. Did people really live this way? I remember thinking that the excesses surrounding me could pay so many medical bills for the CF family struggling to keep their heads above water. It's very nice. Glad you approve. He'd looked at me with a puzzled expression, called for the housekeeper to take our coats, and whisked me off to the deck, where a roaring fire awaited in an outdoor fireplace, and we could take in the spectacular view of Long Island Sound. I was attracted to him. How could I not be? Jackson Parrish was undeniably handsome, his dark hair the perfect frame for eyes bluer than the Caribbean. He was the stuff fantasies were made of. 35-year-old CEO of the company he'd built from the ground up, generous and philanthropic, beloved in the community, charming, boyishly handsome, not the sort of man someone like me dated. I'd read all about his reputation as a playboy. The women he went out with were models and socialites, women whose sophistication and allure far outweighed my own. Maybe that was why his interest took me so by surprise. I was relaxed, enjoying the soothing view of the sound and the salty smell of the sea air, when he handed me a glass of something pink. A Bellini. It will make you feel like it's summer. An explosion of fruit filled my mouth, and the combination of tart and sweet was delectable. It's delicious. I looked out at the sun setting over the water, the sky painted gorgeous shades of pink and purple. So beautiful. You must never tire of this view. He sat back, his thigh next to mine, making me more lightheaded than the drink. Never. I grew up in the mountains and didn't realize what an enchantress the sea is until I moved east. You're from Colorado, right? He smiled. Doing some research on me. I took another sip, emboldened by the alcohol. You're not exactly a private figure. It seemed like I couldn't open a newspaper without reading about Wonder Boy Jackson Parrish. Actually, I'm a very private person. When you reach the level of success that I have, it's hard to know who your real friends are. I have to be careful who I let get close to me. He took my glass and refilled it. But enough about me. I want to know more about you. I'm not very interesting, I'm afraid. Just a girl from a small town. Nothing special. He gave me a wry smile. If you call getting published at 14 nothing special. I love the piece you did for Is Magazine about your sister and her brave fight. Wow, you did your research too. How did you even find that? He winked at me. I have my ways. It was very touching. So you and Julie had both planned on going to Brown? Yes, from the time we were little. After she died, I felt like I had to go. For both of us. That's rough. How old were you when you lost her? 18. He put his hand on mine. I'm sure she's very proud of you. Especially what you're doing, your dedication. The foundation is going to help so many people. I'm so grateful to you. Without your help, it would have taken me years to get a space and a staff. I'm happy to do it. You were lucky to have her. I've always wondered what it would have been like to grow up with brothers and sisters. It must have been lonely being an only child, I said. He had a faraway look. My father worked all the time, and my mother had her charity duties. I always wished I had a brother to go outside and throw a football with or go shoot some hoops. He shrugged. Oh, well, plenty of people had it much worse. What did your father do? He was the CEO of Boulder Insurance. Pretty big job. He's retired now. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. I didn't want to pry, but he seemed like he wanted to talk. Was? He suddenly stood up. She died in a car crash. It's a bit chilly. Why don't we go inside? I stood, feeling woozy, and put a hand on the chair to steady myself. He turned toward me then, his eyes intense, caressed my cheek and whispered, "When you're with me, I don't feel lonely at all." I said nothing as he scooped me into his arms and carried me into the house and up to his bed. Parts of that first night we spent together are still a blur. I hadn't planned on making love to him. I had felt it was too soon. But before I knew it, we were naked and tangled up in the sheets. He held my eyes the entire time. It was unnerving, like he was staring into my very soul, but I couldn't look away. When it was over, he was tender and sweet, and he fell asleep wrapped in my arms. I watched his face in the moonlight and traced the outline of his jaw. I wanted to erase all his sad memories and make him feel the love and nurturing he'd missed as a child. This gorgeous, strong, and successful man that everyone looked up to had shared his vulnerabilities with me. He needed me. There is nothing more enticing to me than being needed. When morning came, I had a pounding headache. I wondered if I'd been simply another conquest, if now that he'd had me, we'd go back to being business associates. Would I join the ranks of his ex-lovers, or was this the start of a new relationship? I worried that he was comparing me to the glamour girls he was used to sleeping with, and that I came up short. He seemed to read my mind. Propping himself on one elbow, he traced my breast with his right hand. I like having you here. I didn't know what to say, so I simply smiled. I bet you say that to all the girls. His face darkened, and he pulled his hand back. No, I don't. I'm sorry. I took a deep breath. I'm a little nervous. He kissed me then, his tongue insistent, his mouth pressed to mine. Then he pulled away and caressed my cheek with the back of his hand. You don't have to be nervous with me. I'll take good care of you. A mixture of feelings washed over me. I untangled myself from his arms and gave him a sincere smile. I need to go. I'll be late. He pulled me back to him. You're the boss, remember? You don't answer to anyone but the board. He was on top of me then, his eyes holding mine again in that hypnotizing stare. and the board doesn't mind if you're late. Please stay. I just want to hold you a little longer. Everything had begun with such promise. And then, like a windshield chipped by a tiny pebble, the chip turned into deep cracks that spread until there was nothing left to repair. 37. Dating as a means to getting to know someone is highly overrated. When your hormones are raging and the attraction is magnetic, your brain takes a vacation. He was everything I never knew I needed. At work, I was back in my comfort zone, though I kept flashing back to our night together with a smile. Hours later, a commotion outside my small office made me look up. A young man was pushing a cart with vase after vase of red roses. Fiona, my secretary, was behind him, her face flushed and hands waving. "Someone sent you flowers! Lots of flowers!" I stood up and signed for them. I counted a dozen vases. I put one bunch on my desk and looked around, wondering what to do with the rest. We placed them along the floor of my small office, since we had nowhere else to set them. Fiona shut the door when the delivery man left and plopped down in the chair across from me. "Okay, spill." I hadn't wanted to discuss Jackson with anyone yet. I didn't even know what we were. I reached over and pulled out the card. "Your skin is softer than these petals. Missing you already. Jay." They were everywhere. It was too much. The cloying smell of the flowers overwhelmed me and made my stomach roil. Fiona was staring at me with an exasperated expression. "Well?" "Jackson Parrish." "I knew it!" She gave me a triumphant look. "The way he was looking at you when he stopped by to see the offices the other day, I knew it was just a matter of time." She leaned forward, her chin in her hands. "Is it serious?" "I don't know." I shook my head. "I like him, but I don't know." I gestured toward the flowers. "He comes on awfully strong." "Yeah, what a jerk, sending you all these beautiful roses." She got up and opened the door. "Fiona."
"Yes?"
"Take a couple for your desk. I don't know what to do with the rest." She shook her head. "Sure thing, boss. But I gotta tell you, he's not gonna be so easy to cast off." I needed to get back to work. I'd figure out Jackson later. I was about to make a phone call when Fiona opened the door again. Her face was ashen. "It's your mother." I grabbed the phone and held it to my ear. "Mom?"
"Daphne, you need to come home. Your father's had a heart attack."
"How bad is it?" I choked out.
"Just come, as soon as you can."
38. The next phone call I made was to Jackson. As soon as I managed to get the words out, he took over.
"Daphne, it's going to be okay. Deep breaths. Stay where you are. I'm on my way."
"But I have to get to the airport. I need to find a flight.
I'll take you. Don't worry."
I'd forgotten he owned a plane. "Can you do that?"
"Listen to me. Stay there. I'm leaving now to get you. We'll go by your place and get some clothes and be in the air in about an hour. Just breathe."
The rest was a blur. I did what he told me, threw things in a suitcase, followed directions until I was seated on his plane, grasping his hand tightly while I looked out the window and prayed. My father was only 59. Surely he couldn't die. When we landed in New Hampshire at a private airport, Marvin, a waiter at the inn, was waiting for us. I guess I made the introductions, or maybe Jackson just took over, I don't remember. All I remember is the feeling in the pit of my stomach that I might never get to talk to my father again. As soon as we arrived at the hospital, Jackson took charge. He found out who Dad's doctor was,
assessed the facility, and immediately had him moved to St. Gregory's, the large hospital an hour from our small town. There is no doubt in my mind that he would have died had Jackson not seen the ineptitude of his treating doctor at County General and the lack of sophisticated equipment. Jackson arranged for a top cardio doctor from New York to meet us at the hospital. The doctor arrived shortly after we did, and upon examining my dad, declared that he hadn't had a heart attack after all, but an aortic dissection. He explained that the lining of his heart had torn, and if he didn't operate immediately, my father would die. Apparently, his high blood pressure had been the cause. He warned us that the delay in the diagnosis had diminished his chance of survival to 50%. Jackson canceled all his meetings and never left my side. After a week, I was prepared for him to go back to Connecticut, but he had something else in mind. "You girls go on ahead," he told me and my mom. "I've talked to your dad about it already. I'm going back to the B&B to make sure everything runs smoothly."
"What about your company? Don't you need to get back?"
"I can handle things from here for now. I've rearranged things a bit. A few weeks away isn't going to kill me."
"Are you sure? There's staff that can fill in for now."
He shook his head. "I can conduct my business from anywhere, but the B&B is a hands-on operation, and when the boss isn't around, things slide. I intend to protect your dad's interests until he's moved back to the inn, and your mother can keep an eye on things."
My mother gave me one of those looks that said, "Don't let go of this one." She put her hand on Jackson's shoulder.
"Thank you, dear. I know Ezra will breathe easier knowing that you're there."
With typical Jackson efficiency and flair, he threw himself into making sure everything ran smoothly, even better than when my father was at the helm. The kitchen was stocked, he oversaw the staff, he even made sure the bird feeders were never empty. One evening, when we were short-staffed, I came back to the inn to see him waiting tables. I think that's when I really fell for him. It was a huge load off my mother, and when she saw how easily he stepped in, she was free to spend all her time at the hospital without worrying what was going on back at the B&B. By the end of the month, my mother was as bewitched as I was.
"I think you found the one, sweetheart," my mother whispered one night after Jackson had left the room.
How had he managed to do that, I wondered. It was as though he'd been around forever, already a part of the family. All my earlier reservations about him evaporated. He wasn't some self-indulgent playboy. He was a man of substance and character. In the space of a few short weeks, he had become indispensable to all of us.
39. Dad was home from the hospital, still weak, but doing better, and Jackson and I were flying to New Hampshire to spend Christmas with my family. My cousin, Barry, and his wife, Erin, were coming with their daughter, and we were all excited about spending Christmas together. We arrived Christmas Eve to falling snow and the perfect New England setting. The inn was decked out in holiday cheer. Standing in the small church where I'd gone every Sunday from the time I was a little girl, I felt at peace, my heart overflowing. My father had survived, and I was in love. It was like a fairy tale. I'd won the prince I never even knew existed in real life. He caught me looking at him and smiled that dazzling smile at me, his cobalt blue eyes shining with adoration, and I could hardly believe that he was mine. When we got back to the inn, my father opened a bottle of champagne and poured a glass for each of us. He put his arm around my mother.
"I want you all to know how much it means to have you here. A few months ago, I wasn't so sure I'd live to see another Christmas."
He brushed a tear from his cheek and lifted his glass.
"To family. Those of us here, and to our darling Julie in heaven. Merry Christmas."
I took a sip, closed my eyes, and said my own silent Merry Christmas to my sister. I still missed her so much. We sat down on the sofas by the tree to exchange gifts. My parents had started a family tradition of giving us three gifts, symbolic of the ones the wise men gave to Jesus.